Welcome to Movie Banter!
Welcome!
Have you pulled out hairs in a weird place?
Sorry about that.
Puberty's finally hit.
It has.
But I'm here anyway.
Powering through.
I'm delighted to be here. Welcome to episode 90 thing.
97. Yes. 97.
Evan.
Yeah. That's how that's pronounced.
That's what it is. We're building up to the big 100. Yeah. Any day now.
We're going to do nothing. Let's be honest. We're going to do nothing of any significance.
Party films.
If you have any suggestions of what we should do, then email us
actually,
and then we'll do them. Whatever you say.
Yes. That's true. Whatever you send in, we will do, unless we pretend you didn't send it in or pretend not to have got the email.
We lost the email.
Yeah.
Lost in the post.
I've never been entirely sure how the internet works.
No, I never really get it. But somehow my postman's busy writing out all these letters and sending it to my computer somehow. So welcome to the show. I'm Paul Crenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jenny Masters.
Caught between two microphones.
Yeah, I know. Yes.
No. You haven't got your own.
No.
You haven't earned it.
You don't get your own.
No, definitely not.
So welcome. This week we have some films to talk about. Hangover 2.
Unusually. Yes.
Well, yeah, it makes a change.
I know.
Normally it's just Witchering, but and X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
Green Lantern.
And Senna.
Mm.
Yeah. So, quite superhero slash drunken slash...
blokey.
Motor racing documentary heavy.
Yeah. Woohoo! Week.
Drunken motor racing?
Yeah.
Well, no, Drunken Hangover 2.
Oh, I see.
Motor racing.
Right.
Senna. Thankfully the two didn't mix.
Yeah.
But even if they did, to be honest, it was still disastrous consequences.
Well, very sure, yes. The end result is much the same.
So, but all that to be discussed in a bit.
You say in a bit. I feel we're all...
Now?
Now.
We could do it now.
Let's go crazy.
We're all in.
I feel we're on the clock slightly.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Shoot.
We're just staring at each other.
Okay.
Yes. Because you've not seen this, have you?
I haven't seen... Hangover 2.
Hangover 2.
No, I haven't seen it.
No,
I haven't. Despite the fact you thought I had, because I did a tweet which was...
Yeah, sounded horribly disparaging to the
Hangover
2. It
was very disparaging, even though I hadn't seen it. I thought it was. It's along the lines of... I couldn't remember what I did last night. Something horrible. Oh, that's right. Saw Hangover 2.
Yes.
Kind of joke.
Yes.
But it's a joke about something I hadn't done. I read the reviews. It sounded awful. But I'm guessing that you'll be more sympathetic to it than many of the critics.
Oh, well, because the critics, even the reviews I've read that slate it, don't seem to say, oh, it's not funny and it's dreadful. The main criticism is just, it's the same as the first one.
Yeah. Mm.
So they're not saying it's a terrible film, but just that critically or creatively speaking, it's somewhat bankrupt.
Mm.
But from an audience point of view, it's pretty much like the first one, which is, it may be not quite as funny... but still pretty funny. I still laughed, still enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But you are there the whole way through thinking, it's the same film.
Yeah.
It's just...
They found a formula, didn't they, with the first one?
Yeah.
And in fact, the worry almost was that you're going to... And I'm sure it's still yet to come. You get lots of straight-to-video, straight-to-DVD versions. Because the thing is, you can't copyright that formula of... It's basically Dude, Where's My Car, isn't it? Similar.
Yeah, very true, actually.
Never seen that one.
You're not?
No, I quite like Dude, Where's My Car, in a weird way. I haven't seen it for years. But I remember quite... I mean, it's not brilliant. It's a bit more hit and miss. And also it's got Ashton Kutcher. And Ashton Kutcher isn't great in it. But Sean William Scott is. But the cast in the Hangover films are far better.
Yes.
And also, Dude Goes My Car gets quite surreal. Which is sort of in its favour.
And then...
Well,
I've seen that bit.
And then...
As you see, if it's a film you still quote at least one bit from, I think it can't be all bad.
Well, it's mostly bad, I thought, but that bit does stick in your head.
Yes.
A very annoying bit. I think largely because our friends Russ and Gav, I seem to recall, just quoted about a month after that, just walked around going, and then...
But I still find it quite
amusing.
Names. It's them. It's them, those two there. I think, well, Gav doesn't listen, I think, and Russ does, I think,
actually,
occasionally. So Russ will probably hear this in about 6 months' time and go, that's me! I said, and then. So if about August next year onwards, Russ walks around starting to do that again, then that's
why. Although he listens,
he's been reminded by this podcast.
But Hangover 2 is, it's just the same film set in Thailand, really. They contrive the means for, I think it's just, is it Justin Bartha? The guy who they lost in the first
Bieber.
One. No. The guy they lost in the first one isn't the guy they lose in this one, but he's there with them on the stag do, and then I had to go early. Why? What happened, guys? So he's just sitting by a pool for the whole of this one. So it's just the same three.
So they lost him in a different way.
They
off without him, basically.
No, he left. He sort of came back to his wife.
I saw the film too.
Really?
Yes.
I don't remember. I forget who I see films with. I know. You were being very quiet. You were looking interested as if you didn't know what was going on.
Well, you're saying exactly... Well, the fact is there isn't much to say about this film. It is a copy of the other one. You know, I mean, in a way you are kept with them through the story, which is, you know, successful in that respect. But if you want something blindingly different, this isn't it. But if you like The Hangover and want to see a bit more of the same thing, then go and see this.
Yeah, it's somewhat darker, I think, because it is in Thailand, and the theory goes, well, it's postulated by various people in this, that you're in Thailand, all bets are off and anything could happen. And there's slightly more gunfire and, you know, risk of death.
There is, the stakes are slightly higher, but...
That's sequel rules all over, isn't it?
Yeah,
you've got to ramp it up a bit.
More of it, more of the same...
But not too much. It's still not heavy on some gross out comedy as such.
There's icky bits.
Yeah, but more sort of stuff you hear about. Or I mean, it's not coarse, for want of a better word. It's not just sort of, hey, there's people throwing up and that's funny. Yeah. I mean, it's more nuanced than that. But it's still, you know, the gist is still
really nuanced.
It's more nuanced than just people throwing up all the time.
It's like saying it's more romantic than. God,
yeah. Washing out on the left sort of thing.
Yes,
yeah. It's well. I mean, my worry is that the thing is, I'm hearing the words you're saying. I'm hearing them. They're kind of washing over me a little bit. Only because, I bow down to Mark Kermode's reviews on a lot of things, and his view of this was not. I mean, if he says something is just a bad film, you kind of go, okay, it wasn't for you. Fair enough. But the way the anger he got into with this film about just how misogynist, racist, sexist, homophobic, the fact that it was just vile on every possible level and offensive to pretty much everyone needlessly and shockingly and just generally an ugly piece of work.
That sounds far more extreme than what I saw.
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, obviously it does have touches of all of those things, but then again, it's a comedy, isn't it? You've got to poke fun
at
women and the gays.
No, but that's the thing you're saying there. I can't think. I'm sure there are examples of each of those three things, but I can't think of
it's
a single. I can't think of a single example.
Things I haven't seen it, so I can't. I'm just all I can do is go like, oh yeah, that's it. I can't.
Yeah, but I can't think of a single.
I'm not going to defend it too strongly.
No, fair enough. Okay, but it's nuanced, Jen. It's nuanced.
I didn't say. I said it was more nuanced than something else.
Fair enough.
But no, I can't think of a...
I don't think it's going to come as a revelation to anyone that it's any different from how you'd expect it.
It's what you'd expect, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. I want to defend it against accusations of rampant homophobia and misogyny, which I really don't think that plays a big part in the film at all. Not that I can think of. There are examples, I'm sure. But it's not like the main tone of the film, just like it wasn't in the first one. I mean, it's just broad, sweet. And also, a lot of it are these three characters being idiots.
Yeah.
So it's not like
the
saying...
jokes on them, kind of. Yeah,
it's seeing them in various stages of having a nervous breakdown, which is quite...
Actually, one thing I would say, that Ed Helms, who is better in this than he was in the... I mean, he was good in the first one, but he's more hangs on him in this one, I think. He has more to do, and he does it very well. And so I think, hope this is a bit more from him is coming in comedy film terms.
Yeah, okay.
He manages to ramp it up quite nicely and react believably to things.
Right.
And overreact at the right... Yeah, he's... that. I mean, because Bradley Cooper, not so much phones it in, but can phone it, because he's meant to be slightly more normal than the others.
Zach
Galifianakis. Yes. He's pretty much the same as he was in the first one, but Ed Helms sort of kicks it up a notch, as it were.
I'm still not convinced by Zach. Anyway, to be honest, I think that's all we can really say.
Yeah, basically, it's pretty much the same as the first one.
We have a comment.
Oh,
Chris Byland says something in very small font. Hangover 2, like The Hangover, but in a different country. Worth watching once.
Yeah, fair enough.
Fair enough.
Yep.
So you mean worth watching once, the Irish film about two romantic souls?
No, he did put a full stop in between, I think that's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
fair point.
You say it's very small. You determined the font. It's not his fault.
Yeah, I copied and pasted. Google would determine the font.
You could change the font.
But that takes effort and time.
Oh, very true.
You know, we've got more bantering to do. We could fit a film in that time.
Very short film.
But yes, Bad Teacher. Not so impressed, says Pete Self. There we go.
Well,
none of us have seen it, so we can't really comment there. That was a review.
I don't want to go and see it.
I was put off by the reviews, but I've spoken to various people, at least three or four, who have been to see it, and all came away saying, it's all right. It's not great, but it can be criticised. But if you sort of go in with media average expectations, it's fine. The one review I read of it, which makes the most sense to me as a film, even though I haven't seen it, is that it's lots of half amusing, half funny moments, but just strung together in a way that makes them all string together. So while you're sort of laughing from point to point, you end up just thinking it's all just tied together for the sake of getting from joke A to joke B.
Yeah.
Really?
No, well, everyone. Yeah.
I would go and see.
I watched Moon last night, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Film.
Yes, exactly. So now I'm thinking, sounds a bit rubbish, doesn't it? You know, all these other things. So.
Well, everything does.
If that was true, you say, I watched The Godfather once. Well, I'll never see this in another film again, because they're all worse than that. I mean,
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. It's only got one Sam Rockwell in it. Rubbish! He's very good. I do like Sam Rockwell.
Yes, he's very good.
I heard an interview on 5 Live with Colin Patterson interviewing Cameron Diaz about Bad Teacher. His first question was, so how bad is this Bad Teacher? And she said, very bad. Very, very bad. I think she meant the character, but it just sounded like she was reviewing her own film.
Yeah.
Going, this is awful. It's the worst piece of work I've done in years.
It might well be.
Possibly true.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else she's done since... Charlie's Angels 2.
Yeah.
Actually, Full Throttle was terrible. Yeah. First one's fun.
I just don't think she's... I mean, she's okay, but I really don't think she's... Yeah, she's quite good, actually. I think because she's also quite a ladette, in a way, if you get me wrong. A very pretty ladette, to some extent. But I just think, in general, she's not exactly the best, you know, challenged actress in the world, so...
No, that's true. That's it. What was the dinner party murder thing she was in years ago? She's quite good in that.
What was that?
Paul, you know.
Dinner Party, Last Supper.
Yes. She's good in that.
Yeah.
She can do well if she wants to.
Night and Day she was in.
There's a reason I forgot
Trek
that.
Forever After. Generally lots of other box. Yeah, My
Sister's Keeper. Actually, My Sister's Keeper she meant to be. Oh, yeah, Holiday.
But again,
it's not really stretching her.
No.
Well, I think the box is slightly more dramatic, but it's not especially good.
Even that didn't hit the mark.
I imagine In His Shoes is probably meant to be slightly more challenging.
That was pretty good.
But I didn't see that, so... Was he really great?
It was pretty good.
Okay.
It was pretty good. But it was like an under-the-radar, I couldn't decide if it's comedy or drama or... Mm. It was a really good story.
Mm.
But at the end of it, you think, I didn't laugh enough for it to be a comedy. Don't know, it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well...
Yeah, fair enough. A little bit... The comparison I'm thinking of is Jennifer Aniston, who's her new film's coming out soon-ish called Horrible Bosses, which the trailer looks good, and I think early reviews are very good as well, and saying she's very good in it. And saying, oh, see, Jennifer Aniston's very good in this, very good in The Good Girl, but does lots of dross apart from that. So I think Cameron Diaz is a little bit like that, in that has potential, but tends just to do films that don't really bring it out.
She picks some odd projects.
Yeah.
Good. Well, shall we move on?
Yes. X-Men First Class.
Hangover 2, we'll be paying tribute to it with our Desert Island Flicks this week.
Ah, yes.
Film set in Thailand.
Yes.
There we go.
Slightly less obscure.
It's going to be a lot of porn. It's not.
Well, we could cover porn. I need another half hour.
No.
I'm joking. I haven't seen any Thai porn. Tied up porn. Different.
Exactly. I never watched any porn in Thailand. Does that count?
Let's back away from the porn.
Whoa. You can't tell two grown men to back away from porn.
I just
anyway. that's a very weird porn film.
I saw the nearest I've seen to anything dodgy on TV lately was Undercover Boss this week. Anyone see this documentary?
I know of it.
Stock Veggie Zoo. And it was the head of Anne Summers going undercover.
I saw the trailer for it.
And it was just. I mean, I haven't been to an Anne Summers ever. If you're from a different. Anne Summers is kind of like.
It's a high street sex shop.
Used to be a sex shop. They've kind of got a bit more high street.
It's classed itself as lingerie.
A bit more.
Lingerie and like Hindu.
Yeah.
Giggly stuff. Right, but they do have areas in the shop
which clearly.
Stock up on rabbits.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of rabbits. And there's a lot of. They just showed lots of clips of like 75 old women sort of. Just going, oh, this looks quite nice. Oh, apparently the packet here says it could take me to ultimate pleasure. And just going, oh no, you're nearly 80.
Do they not have a right to ultimate pleasure?
They're absolutely fine, but I just don't want to see it rammed down. But I'm not going to go there. X-Men First Class.
Anyway, cracking on.
Right.
I'll remind you of this conversation, Jen, when you're 80 and still looking for ultimate pleasure.
Going, John, can you take me to Amsterdam?
No.
What?
No, as in, my point is just that you as an 80-year-old woman may still...
I hope as an 80-year-old woman I'll keep it private.
Wish. I don't see why.
Well, that's the thing on this documentary on TV. I wasn't surprised that they're doing all this stuff. I'm just surprised that they were that willing to go on TV and sort of, you know, they clearly signed the release form to say, I'll talk about this gladly. I'll waive a, you know.
Well, why not?
This we're all human. Thing and, you know.
Anyway, no, right, anyway, X-Men. Yeah,
X-Men. We do mean slightly.
That's a whole different part of the Ann Summers stories, the X-Men. I haven't seen this, but talk about words.
This is, some people are saying, oh, it's a reboot, but it's not a reboot, because Matthew Vaughan, who directed it, has said it's not a reboot. It takes liberties with the X-Men continuity, slightly, but it's basically just a prequel, in pure terms.
Yeah.
To the X-Men films that we know and like. Covering all four, yeah. Really, what stage are you at then, Paul?
I'm at the love stage forever. Obviously.
Of course.
For the last three seconds, it will be the.
Just more than me.
All at the end.
Yeah. Just save up that last.
I never got to Ann Summers.
That might be what kills you.
Maybe.
That
final. Oh dear.
Yes. What's the guy from Top Secret? He said, we tried for hours. It took us 3 hours just to get the smile off his face.
Bury me in a Y-shaped car. Moving on.
Yes. Anyway, again. X-Men First Class. Yeah, this is a prequel to the X-Men films, which retcons a few things that it needs to. But it's all set in the 60s, in the early days of the X-Men sort of getting together.
Quite
Professor
nicely
X.
Done.
It's very nicely done. Yeah, I really, really like this. It's very well directed by Matthew Vaughan, with Michael F. Aspender as Magneto. That's the only way I can think of him. It's just that. His name's Michael Fassbender.
Yes. But he's not Aspender.
Oh, see. He is. It's Michael F. Aspender.
To his face.
And the lovely James McAvoy.
Yes. Jen's favourite. Well, one of Jen's several favourite men.
He's very good. That's
He's very good as.
And he's good in this.
Yeah.
They're both good.
I think
this,
a full head of hair. With a few gags made saying, oh, don't touch the hair, etc.
Oh, okay.
Which, obviously is not long for this earth.
Yeah, indeed.
And with sort of one or two X-Men that we know, I think like Beast is played by, I can't remember his name, guy from About a Boy, who was in
Hugh
Skins.
No, the young boy, the boy.
Oh, I don't know if he has a name. I mean, I just don't know if he has a name.
The boy with no name.
Yes. That's why they called it About a Boy.
Nicholas.
I don't know. It's not Nicholas.
Oh, look it up, boy. You haven't seen this. You make yourself useful.
All right.
Know your place, Granza. He plays Beast, who was Kelsey Grammer in the later films. You just put in Nicholas Lyndhurst.
Sorry.
Oh, dear. It's very 60s.
Nicholas Holt,
that's it. It's very, very good and sets up, clearly setting up a new franchise, but not in a bad way. So it's a self-contained story. And we know kind of where it's going, and it sort of ends where you think it could lead straight into the first X-Men film. I mean, with a 30-year gap, but as in Magneto is evil and off we go. But
it's not really as simple as that.
There's still tension. Sort of Charles still hopes that he sort of can save him. But then he does throughout the X-Men films as well.
Yeah.
So,
which actually is quite good for me, because I haven't seen all the X-Men film, but sometimes they're going, there's definitely more going on, and it's nice to see that explored and to know that it's not actually finalised yet as well, that you can see both sides of everyone's story and it's a lot more interesting in that respect.
Yeah. And also some of the mutants are being brought into the good side and then we know they're going to turn or when they're going to turn or what makes them turn. Mystique actually is an example, which they cover quite, because Mystique is played by Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh yes.
Who's in Winter's Bone. Yes, who's very good. But she is younger than, or she looks a bit younger than Professor X does in this. Mm. But then in the later films, of course, she's Rebecca Romijn Stamos compared to... I'm going blank.
Do better than me, don't worry.
Patrick Stewart, yes. Mm. So he looks a lot younger. So you think, hang on, if they're now she's younger than him, then what's going on?
But she can change her looks.
No, exactly. And they just cover that and say, hang on, you're not ageing at a normal rate because of your mutation. Brilliant, job done.
And
no questions asked, you move on.
Useful.
So we're sort of seeing their backstory and sort of playing it out. And so it all... Broadly speaking, it all kind of fits with the later films. They've tweaked a few things, which works for me, spotting mistakes in them, but not in any way that ruins it. And there's also a cameo, very, very good cameo, which I think I knew there was a cameo, but didn't know from who.
Who is it?
I'm gonna ruin it. No, because it's funny. Spoilers. But it's a very good cameo with one good swear word in it as well.
Ooh, a swearing cameo.
A swearing cameo. Yeah.
What could it be?
King's Speech snapshot to show.
Colin Firth rocks off.
Turns out King George was a mutant.
Yes. I'll tell you off air.
Yeah. Good.
But yeah, ultimately, it's extremely good. Yeah, very good effect. I mean, considering when it was being made, there were various rumours, reshoots, and they've not got enough time, and it's running over, and what's going on. And the end result.
No, the reason why, I'm just realising the reason why, is that there is a rather suspicious accent going on.
Oh, that, yes, actually, that's the one example of it. Because Mr. Aspender is, which I is, was he half German, half Irish?
Yes, yeah.
No, he actually is. Which I didn't realise, but to start off with, he's sort of quite neutral. I mean, much like Ian McKellen is. He's sort of, maybe slightly American, but slightly English, just sort of this mid-Atlantic. And then he starts off like that. And as it goes on, towards the end, there's definite Irishness coming in.
Oh, really?
It's a bit can you say that again?
Yeah. Right. And one theory, I think it was in one review I read, theorising that just maybe, due to the tight schedule, they sort of got everything done, but ideally they would have redubbed his lines to get it done right, and didn't have time. So
maybe they ran out of time, and the Irish often speak faster than Brits. Maybe they said, Michael, can you just do it in Irish?
Do it in Irish.
Rattle it in Irish accent. And rattle it off.
You've got to take 30 seconds off this scene.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, it's very good.
I actually enjoyed it. I recommend it.
I would hope to see it at some point. I would hope to see it.
Yeah,
it's very good.
Yeah, and also, I think the 60s-ness works well for it as well. Mm. Just makes it slightly more interesting.
Makes it quite stylish.
Yeah. 60s coming back in. Yeah.
And means also you can sort of throw in, because it's all set around the Cuban Missile Crisis. Right. And it adds another degree of, here's what was going on behind it. And it just makes it slightly more relatable.
Did the mutants avert it then? Was it down to them?
Some averted it, some caused it.
Oh.
Maybe. Yeah.
Kevin Costner did it, we all know it.
Well, very good.
He averted it.
Kevin Bacon is in this as the main bad guy.
Yes.
Is he the cameo?
No. He's a full fledged part.
Did you
see Kevin's Bacon? No, that
doesn't most of them.
But anyway, yeah. So X-Men: First Class, go and see it.
Good.
Although that's it. I mean, we're so far behind in podcast. I think it's probably rent it when it comes out on DVD.
Some of these are from about a month ago.
But it's fine. But then this is for the casual movie as well as the obsessive people like us.
Green Lantern as well superhero.
It's another superhero film that was more disappointing.
Oh, was it?
But I'd be hard pushed to say why. It's very hard to, because this is Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern.
I get confused because there's been Green Hornet, which was Blokey Boy.
Seth Green.
Yeah, and then there was Green Goblin.
What's Green Goblin?
Rogan.
Green Goblin was in Spider-Man, wasn't he?
Yes, it was a bad guy.
That thingy.
Yeah.
There's Green Card, which is Gerard Depardieu.
Yes.
Superhero.
Superhero. He has a card.
Desert Island Flicks. Films are green.
Green films. Yeah. Oh, we could do, actually.
We could do a Green Jorgen.
Although I haven't seen Green Hornet. There's Green Arrow, who's the DC Robin Hood style superhero, who hasn't been in a film as far as I know yet.
All the greens,
yeah.
Rachel Green,
yes.
Color of Money, which is
green,
yeah. only in America, in the UK, it's multicolored.
Joseph is an amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Technicolor
got a bit of green in somewhere.
Yeah, Muppets.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Anyway,
okay,
we get distracted. Yeah. But in part it's slightly hampered because Green Lantern. Geek that I am, I sort of read up on the backstory of Green Lantern and the history of it, and it's got a really quite a very involved story and history to it, and is arguably one of the most high-powered superheroes in the world. And there's more, and it's not just him. I mean, Green Lantern is, there's a Green Lantern Corps, so there's like millions or thousands of aliens around the galaxy, or around the universe, who all get green power rings that let them do stuff. So I think essentially there was a more interesting film to be made than this.
Right.
This focuses a little bit too much on just Ryan Reynolds' character. He sort of gets sucked into it. Well, the ring seeks him out and says, he is suitable to be the ring bearer. And he says, I'm not too sure. They go, no, I'll give it a go anyway. Then he basically says, no, this isn't for me, I quit. And then gets pulled back into it and then saves the world with minimal training.
Is it like Lord of the Rings, then? You put the ring on, you get the powers?
Kind of, yes. Okay. As in, it's purely the power of will. So your willpower lets you create whatever you need in the world, right. And then you can do that. Yeah. Which could be a bit silly. I mean, there's a film I watched called Green Lantern First Flight, which is an animated film, And that was actually better than this. Oh. Not in a bad way, but it did a better job of pitching it as, you are part of this intergalactic core and we work together as a team to fight bad things, and you know, here's how we work. And that was quite involved.
Whereas in this, he turns up and everyone goes, no, we don't like you.
Well, exactly. No, yeah, you're human. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's part of it as well. Do? But then rather than training and proving his worth, it's more to, no, I quit. And then he ends up managing to save the world, despite not really knowing what he's doing. You know, he's, oh, you're one of the greatest Green Lanterns of all time. I thought, well, it's all just a bit rushed. This could have been a lot longer or sort of a bigger arc over two films.
To be honest, I don't know whether maybe this is just actually a younger film, because some of the guises that he used to succeed, this will creation thing he has, they're quite juvenile.
Slightly, which I think is part of the comic as well. But yeah. That's it. It doesn't look silly. It could have looked silly. I mean, things like, although there's one choice that's a bit odd, which where there's a helicopter crashing, and he's recently been playing with his nephew's toy car, sort of in a racetrack loop thing, and the helicopter's crashing, and so he manages to create a car that the helicopter lands on and then sort of whizzes around a track and then deposits it safely. I thought, right, it makes for a good spectacle, but in practical terms, surely a big net would have been better, or yeah, a spring or something. So it's a little bit odd. Mm. But it doesn't look silly. I mean, the decision looks a bit odd. But I mean, in the animated thing, he's got being pestered by flying aliens around him. He sort of basically summons an enormous fly swatter and slams them around. But it kind of, so things like that can work, but it's just a little bit, yeah, you can't
well,
quite
that's why
relate
I think
to it.
I can imagine boys and young girls probably really, engaging, going, yeah, imagination, look what we could do and stuff like that. So I don't quite know where it's pitched.
It seems like it's almost around at the wrong time with the Avengers and all that. Kind of filling the screens as
slightly.
Well.
Slightly.
I'm thinking Thor sounds better.
Yeah, Thor is better. And Captain America, the Captain America trailer looks better, as well. And it just seems like, editing-wise,
going towards, no, they're not, are they?
What?
Going towards the same.
Green Lantern's
Thor,
not
Thor and Captain America are. Green Lantern's
not. Yes.
So, and editing-wise, it just seems a bit chopped up. And the best example of it is when he's talking to his love interest, sort of, on top of an aircraft control tower, because they're both pilots and work together, and so he sort of flies her up there. They're having a chat, and she's
happy?
They end up quite happy. And, I think she's just found out that he's got these powers, and, there's a bit of tension between them, but they're sort of chatting, and it's all right. And then it sort of cuts to him flying her back home, and she's in tears, basically. Oh, you're not the man you could be. And then he sort of leaves. And it's all. I feel
what?
there was like a couple of minutes of conversation that were just chopped out.
Okay. Crazy woman must be coming.
And the conversation they were having could have led to that point, but only if he had a bit of intervening chat. It's a little bit. It just feels a bit too shallow, and a bit too rushed, and a bit too misedited.
I think I'll give it a miss.
But they are apparently working on a sequel, because while financially it didn't do especially well, it sounds like they still sort of got faith in it.
They've set it up for a sequel as well, rather annoyingly.
Jen and I slightly disagree on this, but no, I can see her point, but we won't ruin it for you. No. But there is a shot at the end that is very famous in comic books, and they've recreated the panel that it looks like. But Jen's point was that that should have been sort of a big chunk of the second film, really, sort of what is going on there. And I can see that point. But
or even in some way a bit more in this film, just rather than a little cough at the end.
Because what we see, there were sort of hints of, but not enough. Yeah, well, I think it fits in with the whole thing, that it's all just a bit rushed and slightly mismanaged.
Mm.
But it's not a disaster. I didn't leave thinking, oh, it was dreadful, I should never have seen it. But just came away thinking it could have been more than it was.
Yeah.
And really, I wanted to see more of the other aliens and the idea of this universal group.
See what they could come up with. That would have been quite good.
Well, yeah. It's things like they have a sequence, sort of a training sequence, which is quite entertaining for some visual effects, but it lasts about 5 minutes, and you're still no good. But then when he needs to use his power, suddenly he's brilliant. So it's just things like that. None of it quite gelled.
I found a comment from a listener.
Ooh, cool. Uh-huh.
This is from a new listener called Jed. Welcome,
Jed.
First timer. Who says, Green Lantern is not as bad as a lot of reviews are making it sound. A little like 2008's The Incredible Hulk or 2007's Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer, so it's okay.
Yeah.
He does say X-Men First Class was very good, much better than Wolverine film. I think it's the first truly period-set superhero film, which is quite a distinction.
Yeah.
Great cast of characters. Brings it to mind the classic James Bond films, what with Kevin Bacon hamming it up Hamming, breaking. As supervillain Sebastian Shaw.
So. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, Michael F. Fassbender is a future, could be a future Bond, I think. Because early on, it does quite a good job, because the first X-Men, jumping back to X-Men, the first X-Men film starts with sort of Magneto in a concentration camp and like bending the bars or bending the gates. And this recreates that. But then follows on, we sort of see what happens after that, which makes for a nice connection between the two films, actually. And then a lot of it is him, or the first chunk is him going around trying to get vengeance on the people in the camp for what happened to him. And that sort of vengeance, you know, one man going alone thing is quite Bondy. So, yeah, I think he's got potential Bondness to him. So, Senna.
Senna, yes. From superhero to hero.
Yes.
Of a sort. In that, yes, he was a hero to the nation of Brazil. Obviously, the biggest motor racing car driver in the world of his time.
Yeah.
And this is a documentary which has been put together entirely from clips that are of his races and, you know, publicly available clips, really, you know, clips from news shows and interview shows, that sort of thing. So what's quite nice is there's voiceovers over the top from family and friends and commentators and colleagues talking about the races, explaining to us, the audience, if we don't know Formula One particularly well, about what each race means and that sort of thing, what it meant to him. But we only ever see the races.
Okay.
All the behind the scenes thing. It doesn't suddenly cut to a sofa and it's his father going, this is what his childhood was like.
Yeah.
Right.
That is spoken of, but it's, you know, it's all with the footage of the F1 stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not quite an interesting angle. It means that you don't sort of end up just sitting watching people on a sofa talking.
Yes.
Which is good. And the focus is entirely on Senna himself, which is great because I'm not a Formula One fan. I've never seen a Formula One race in my life. Never seen anything motor racing. But I thought it was fascinating and brings you to tears. And it's just a great story about one guy and what he wanted to achieve and what he did achieve and then what you do after that and just how far you push stuff, really. So I think it's a really good documentary. I think it's very good.
I've heard good things, but haven't yet seen it. And even because I'm not a Formula One fan, I'll sort of half watch it if it's on and nothing else is and I'm really bored, but generally not at all.
Yeah.
But apparently it is very, even if you're not interested at all, as you said, it follows a plot, essentially. There's a proper arc to it, rather than just, here's some stuff that happened. It sounds fascinating.
And they're bigging up as well. They've I don't know how much of it is engineered to make a story of a plot of a film, but it looks, I mean, he's got a rival, and there's an antagonist in the story, which is, not Marcel Proust, he's a philosopher, Alan Prost. Who's sort of same teammates, but rivals, and how they sort of, they fall in, you know, in together and out together, that sort of thing. And the pressures that are on the motor racing world to get the bigger, the faster cars and how far they're going to push it. And some fascinating behind-the-scenes stuff of the team meetings before the big races, which it seemed so informal, like a classroom where the F1 boss is saying, now, I want a good, clean race, and we've got some tyres up around the first corner. And then one of them goes, excuse me, sir, we don't want tyres, we want cones, because they're safer. And they go, well, who wants cones? All right, well, okay. And it's all very informal. It's not, you don't expect it to be like that. It's just really just gather around a table and go, all right, okay, guys, all right. Just really insightful and inventive and well put together film. And we had an email from Tony Cook, actually, who echoed those thoughts in that he said, I don't care one bit about F1 before... I didn't care one bit about F1 before I saw it. Afterwards, I very nearly watched some of a race. That's a seriously big impact. Can't think of another documentary in years with a better constructed story to it.
Wow.
So, I think that is high praise indeed, but well deserved.
I might give it a go then, considering I'm a girl.
I think you'd still like
it. Whoa. You're
I'm
a girl?
I'm basically a girl when it comes to sport. And I still liked it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I recommend it to my brother.
You mean you can't throw?
You know, I love netball and lacrosse.
And wear those short skirts all the time.
Oh, love them.
It's a bit of a weird choice.
Very breezy.
Exactly.
Cools your nethers.
Please
put some pants on.
I don't think we can top that.
No, top that. Let's leave it there. Speaking of that, Thailand films. Desert Island Fix this week. Best film set in Thailand.
Yes.
Which is
sort of slim pickings ish.
There's a few.
There's a few good
We've got about four or so on our big list here of Thailand films we just keep for this sort of occasion.
Is that it?
It takes hours to
never leave home without one.
It's very true.
I'll tell you what, I'll talk about. There's three that I would kind of like consider personally to be strong contenders. That is Anna and the King.
Mm-hmm.
The King and I, maybe actually put The King and I first,
yeah.
because I grew up with this lovely film, which is obviously quite controversial in many ways, but I think I'll actually go for The Beach.
Yeah.
It's called Son of the Beach.
Son of the Beach.
Yeah, very good.
Beach.
Beach, very good. Yeah, yeah. Leo and...
Yeah, sure, I remember. Yeah. I think I've only seen once, but I remember quite liking.
Yeah.
And then read the book. I think I did it the right way around because I saw the film and quite liked the film. Then read the book and liked the book more.
Yeah.
I think people who read the book seem to then watch the film. Oh, it's not as good as the book.
Yeah.
Then just read the book.
I think everyone's wanting a follow up to Trainspotting. Is that right? Because it's the same director, I think, was it?
Yeah, it's Danny Boyle.
Yes, it was.
Who's since gone on, of course, too.
In it as well as crazy one.
Yeah, good film. Mm. I'm going to go for Bridge on the River Kwai because Alec Guinness and a bridge. What's not to love?
Why not?
Just he won a bridge for 2 hours.
And the music.
Very true.
Good film.
So which leaves me with slimmer pickings.
Yeah.
I say, I think Hangover 2 of the others, because otherwise, do you want me to pick Street Fighter? Really?
Man with the Golden Gun.
See, Man with the Golden Gun, I can't remember how much of that is really set in Thailand, though. But Man with the Golden Gun is good.
Rambo 3.
See, I think that some of the Rambo films are. I'd put it. Shout out of sorts to Stealth, which is not great, don't get me wrong, but I think it got unfairly maligned for just being a sort of roboplane thing. And it seems to be, it's just going to be 2 hours of trying to shoot down a plane. But I just remember watching it and liking it because it gets more interesting than you'd think. Not saying it's a brilliant film, but the plot, there's more to it, and it sort of unfolds in a more interesting way than I was expecting for the kind of film it was. So if you've not seen it and are in the mood for low-budget DVD B-movie...
But
if ever you see it, if it comes on TV, then it, don't just think, it's going to be rubbish. At least give it a try.
I do iron. It's my skirts, exactly. Got to get the pleats right. Come on.
At least take them off first, Paul. You remember that burning incident?
Dehouch.
Right.
Yeah, I think
on that bombshell. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
And next time on Movie Banter, we shall discuss
some films.
Kung Fu Panda 2,
oh, yes.
Bridesmaids, and Larry Crown.
Yes.
Tune in next time for that. But don't necessarily email us about them because we're about to record
We're about to record it now. We've got some jams and things together. But if you do email them, we will get around to them. But just don't. If you email us now, don't be surprised if you don't hear it for a few weeks. Yeah.
But what we'd like is to know what you'd like us to do for our 100th podcast.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
Email in any good wishes and the like. And you could send in, we talked about people sending recordings, didn't we?
Oh, yes, please do.
Happy birthday.
Please do.
So either that or just an idea of what...
I'm less interested in that, just because I'm the one who always has to do
all the
editing.
Good point. Sorry, that's a great point. Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, pain.
Just send in words.
Send in words, and we'll read out the words.
Or thoughts.
Send in words and a description of what your voice sounds like. And we'll try and,
recreate
it in a flawless and not at all insulting way.
Describe your accent in 10 words.
Yeah.
And we shall try and offend you in 10 words or
less. We'll try and minimally offend you.
Give us a challenge. Come on.
Come on, we can do it.
Jen's great with accents. Yeah.
Good.
Yes, have a good 2 weeks.
Bye.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.